And I'm Ash. Welcome to Crime Potatoes Podcast.
Grab your snacks, get comfy,
and let's get to it. Look, talk in there.
Why?
You want to try, Kate?
Okay. Night.
Say love you.
Hi, you.
Back to another episode.
Another week, another episode.
And you guys are not ready for the case we have for you today. Surprise, I've never
How
heard
do you
it,
know?
So. I don't even know the case, so we're all in for a treat.
Oh boy.
I hope you all had a better day than I did.
Uh-oh.
Just kidding. My day actually really wasn't that bad. I'm just so exhausted. I don't know what it is, but like the last few days, this pregnancy is like really hitting me. I'm not comfortable. I just feel like a walrus. And I'm only 17 weeks in case y'all were wondering. Well, I feel like one. Anyways, so.
Oh boy.
But enough about me.
Well, what are you snacking on, Ash?
Well, I have water and I just ate dinner, and so I have a little package of Smarties because nothing sounds good right now. So.
Oh boy.
Here I am. But what are you snacking on? I'm sure yours is funner than mine.
No, not really. I just have my Diet Dr. Pepper. And since I'm telling the case today, I figured I shouldn't be smacking food in your ear. So, just a Diet Dr. Pepper for me today.
Fair enough. Okay, really quick. I don't know what it is, but I feel like it happened last year too. All over Facebook and Instagram, mostly Facebook, around the holidays, people post like AI generated Dr. Pepper pictures.
Oh yeah.
Of different like new exciting flavors. Like there was like a vanilla frost one I seen, and today the one I saw was, oh my gosh, now I forgot. A caramel apple crumble Dr. Pepper. And immediately I'm like, I need that in my life. And of course, it's just a freaking AI.
People need to stop with this AI fake Dr. Pepper stuff because it is making me want to try a lot of different Dr. Peppers. So,
yeah. Dr. Pepper, you just like need to get on it. If you're listening to us, anybody, you're probably not, but
we can only hope.
Yeah, please make that caramel apple crumble Dr. Pepper. That just sounds like crispy, caramely goodness, and I need it in my life, so.
Yeah.
Thank you in advance.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
If you guys have seen any other ones, you guys should share, because there's so many out there, too. Like, there's some weird ones I've seen, but anyways.
I haven't seen any weird ones yet.
Send them to us. DM the advertisements to us, because I need to see
yes,
them.
Yes, please. Send me the weird.
Let's boycott Dr. Pepper and make them pay it.
There's no way I can boycott
their fault.
Dr. Pepper.
That sounds like too much work, so just kidding.
Too much work.
We'll just stick to sitting here and talking to you guys. So, anyways, I'll turn the time over to you, Kenzie.
Oh my gosh.
That sounded like I just finished like a church talk.
Every time you say it like that, it does. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Anyways.
Sorry. Lots of babbling today. Okay, go ahead, Kenz.
You've not been home with a toddler by yourself all day. It's fine.
Not at all. I'm fine. I'm totally fine.
All right. So, my case sources are Wikipedia, Unsolved.com, evelazarus.com and the book Who Killed Cindy James? A Woman's Story of Persecution and Terror by Ian Mulgrew. And I haven't finished the book yet, but I did get a lot of information from there because I did kind of skim through it so that I could finish this case. So
basically you don't know what you're even talking about.
Oh, just you wait. Just you wait, Ash.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
But from the name, I don't think I've ever heard this case, so I'm excited.
I have, but researching it was even crazier than what I had heard of the case.
It usually is.
In 1989, the death of Cindy James, a woman whose life had been marked by a series of terrifying and unexplained events, left the small community of Vancouver in shock and disbelief. Her case became one of the most puzzling and haunting mysteries in Canadian criminal history. When Cindy's body was discovered near her home, the circumstances surrounding her death only deepened the enigma. Was she the victim of a relentless stalker, or had she taken her own life after years of trauma? The investigation into her death would reveal unsettling truths, but it would also leave a series of questions that have never been fully answered.
Well, I'm intrigued. Was this a good beginning? Because I think it was. If you guys listened to 2 weeks ago, if you know, you know.
If you know, you know.
Oh, goodness.
Cynthia Elizabeth Hack was born on June 12th, 1944, in the small town of Oliver, British Columbia. The daughter of Matilda, or Tilly, a dedicated homemaker, and Otto Hack, a former colonel in the Royal Canadian Air Force. As the oldest girl of six children, with three older brothers and two younger sisters, she grew up in a pretty busy household. Cindy's father's military career led the Hack family to Ottawa, which is the capital city of Canada, where Cindy spent her teenage years and attended high school. Behind closed doors, however, Cindy's childhood was shaped by her father's strict discipline in their household, using corporal punishment often, something she would later reflect on in her diaries. As Cindy entered adulthood, she set her sights on a nursing career, enrolling in nursing school in Vancouver in 1962. While she was immersed in her studies, her father re-enlisted with the Air Force and relocated the family to France. Cindy would visit them during holidays, but other than that, would keep in touch through letters. And in those letters, she spoke of an unnamed intern she had met during her time in nursing school, a man she claimed to have once been engaged to. She also revealed that he had been diagnosed with terminal cancer. And according to Cindy, the two went on a skiing trip where the man committed suicide. But here's the thing. No one in her family ever met this mysterious man, and Cindy never revealed his name, and they couldn't find any information on any suicides happening on this vacation. So, just curious.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. So, while they were dating, did her family know about it, or like they found about all of this after the fact?
So she wrote to them about it during and after. Yeah, but she never said what his name was, where he was from, any information to help them find out who he could have been. But yeah, so these letters, she wrote them in the letters during and after, so.
Okay. I was just wondering, because at first, like just how you said it, I was like, so they just found a bomb drop on them, like all of this at once. I'm like, that's kind of crazy. Like, it makes it seem even a little bit more like What? But okay.
Yeah, no, she did write about him during their alleged relationship.
Okay.
So. In the summer of 1965, Cindy met Roy now I'm probably saying his name wrong, so bear with me, but Cindy met Roy McPeace, a South African psychiatrist who was 18 years older than her. Their whirlwind romance resulted in marriage on December 9th, 1966, the same year Cindy graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Nursing. But while the couple celebrated their union, Cindy's family was far from thrilled. Her parents, especially her father, were deeply concerned, worried that Roy had preyed on Cindy's, quote, youthful naivety, end quote. Family members soon began to testify that the marriage was full of tension, and not the good kind, with Cindy and Roy often emotionally distant. Things took a darker turn when Cindy later accused her husband of spousal abuse. Roy did claim that he had, quote, only slapped her twice, end quote, during their time together.
Only twice.
Yeah, only.
Yeah.
Doesn't about, matter. Like, you still hit
don't.
Her.
Yeah. Okay.
Despite his credentials as a psychiatrist in South Africa, Roy struggled to find success in Canada, failing twice to obtain his medical license. Instead, he settled for a position as an assistant professor at the University of British Columbia. From 1966 to 1975, Cindy worked as a pediatric nurse at Vancouver General Hospital, where her husband, Roy McPeace, had also been employed at one point. In 1973, Roy transitioned to a new role as the director of health services at BC Hydro, while Cindy's own career took a turn in April 1975, when she was hired as a team coordinator at Blenheim House, a facility dedicated to children with behavioral disorders. Over the next 12 years, Cindy became known for her exceptional competence and professionalism, earning the respect of her colleagues for her dedication and skill. Though her marriage was becoming increasingly strained, Cindy's work at Blenheim House was a bright spot where she made a lasting impact on the children she cared for. By early 1982, Cindy's marriage had unraveled, and she and Roy separated, only for her life to take a terrifying turn just 4 months later. Between 1982 and 1989, over a span of nearly 7 years, Cindy reported approximately 90 incidents of criminal activity to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, or the RCMP. Her claims detailed a disturbing pattern of harassment, including stalking, vandalism, arson, intimidation, home invasions, and physical assaults perpetrated by an unknown individual or group. The sheer volume and variety of the incidents left authorities baffled, as Cindy's life seemed to spiral deeper into chaos under the shadow of these mysterious and violent events. And now, we are going to take a look at those 7 years of torment, but next week in part two.
What?
Yes.
Ugh. Fine.
Fine. Sorry.
I don't even know what to say.
I know this. So the first part is a little bit shorter because I didn't know. I couldn't go into the 7 years without stopping like right in the middle. So, yeah. So this episode is going to be a little shorter. But yeah.
All right. Really fast. Oh my gosh, my words are gone. How many reportings were there, did you say, to police again?
So, approximately 90. give or take, over a span of 7 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And
that's a lot. I mean, it might not seem like a lot over a span of 7 years, just because, you know, that's 256 days times seven. But still, that's a lot.
Without giving anything away for next episode, I will say I think there has been many incidences that weren't reported to the police as well, which, again, okay, we'll learn more about.
Which makes sense, because I feel like any situation, domestic violence or whatever it may be, there are going to be some things that weren't reported.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, there's a freaking fly right here. There are going to be some things that aren't reported. So, anyways.
Yes. Yes.
But just in case you were all curious, because I was, so I just did the math. Not in my head, because I'm not that smart. I got out my calculator. But I did like 90 divided by 7 just to see how many that would be like in a year. And that is 12 a year. 12.85 to be exact.
So almost.
So that's like one a month.
Yeah, one a month.
Which is a lot.
Yeah. And yeah, just wait. Sorry to make you wait, but just wait.
Yeah, you're a jerk. So see you guys. Just kidding. All right, well, guess you guys better come back next week for part two.
Yes.
And sorry about all these double parters, but I hope you guys enjoy it. I promise it won't happen forever, but the cases we've been doing just happened to be all right next to each other.
For real.
So there we have it. But all right. Well, thank you, Kenzie, and come back for part two. Stay safe, potatoes.
Bye.